This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. On today's show, using art to help boost literacy. Learning through art turns 25. But first, founded in 1905 by Robert Abbott, the Chicago Defender is the oldest and most respected African-American newspaper in Chicago. Eitan Mihaly was a copy editor and investigative reporter at the paper from 1991 to 1996. He then went on to found the Residence Journal, a magazine written and produced by the tenants of Chicago's public housing developments, and the affiliated not-for-profit We the People Media. His book, The Defender, How Chicago's Legendary Black Newspaper Changed America, was released last year. Eitan's going to be the featured speaker next week at the National Underground Railroad Freedom Center's John and Francie Pepper Freedom Lecture Series, and he joins us this afternoon, along with the Freedom Center Manager of Program Initiatives, Chris Miller. And you can join us at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Eitan and Chris, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Mark.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, Eitan, can you start off by telling us about the origins of the Chicago Defender? Why did Robert Abbott start this newspaper?
Sure. So Robert Abbott is a man who came from a remarkable background. He was born at the just a couple years after the end of slavery in Savannah, Georgia. His biological father died shortly after he was born. The biological father may never have even seen him, and his mother remarried a man who was of both African and German descent, and had actually been raised in Germany and had come to the United States in the wake of the Civil War to look at whether his father, who was a German sea captain, had any assets. So Robert Abbott benefited from the European education and sophisticated background of his stepfather, who was known as the Reverend Sengstack, and became quite a figure in the suburbs of Savannah, Georgia, where Robert Abbott was raised. Robert Abbott initially came to Chicago for the 1893 World's Fair, where he met the great Frederick Douglass and the former slave who had, of course, been a friend of Abraham Lincoln's and an important figure in the pre-civil rights era. Frederick Douglass was still alive in 1893 at 75 years old. He was the preeminent spokesperson for African Americans, and he was, of course, a former newspaper man. And he, along with Ida B. Wells, who was a crusading investigative reporter just a few years older than Robert Abbott, really inspired Robert Abbott to come back to Chicago and launch the Chicago Defender in 1905. And it really was a vehicle for the liberation of African Americans who were at that time being oppressed by a new wave of segregation, legal segregation, and extrajudicial violence in the South, where the overwhelming majority of African Americans lived. And it took Robert Abbott just a few years. At first, he was desperately poor, and he literally went without food or clothing to get the Defender going for its first few years. But it very quickly became a national spokesperson for African Americans, the first national communications vehicle for African Americans.
How did he go about, Eitan, turning the Defender into a newspaper of such national influence?
So his vision, he had been trained at Hampton University, and so he was familiar with the latest, and Hampton then as now is one of the premier African-American institutions of higher learning. And so Robert Abbott was very familiar with all of the technological developments in printing that were going on at the time. Hearst and Pulitzer were, of course, the most famous individuals to make use of this technology, by which newspapers had gone very quickly from a boutique enterprise, something that we would say today had to be produced artisanally, where each issue was kind of handcrafted and therefore very expensive and slow to produce. Newspapers suddenly became something that you could produce very quickly and very cheaply. And at the same time, there were a lot of composition elements that you could suddenly introduce to newspapers. You could have large headlines. You could have photos or cartoons or other images. You could divide up sections of the newspaper into news and features, where previously everything had just been one long column. So Robert Abbott took all of these techniques and brought them into newspapers for African Americans. He was ridiculed at first, and as I said, he experienced many years of penury as he tried to make the Defender into a success. But the idea caught on, and he, from the beginning, had a loyal group of followers, of people who believed in his vision. Some of them were Pullman porters or train workers who would bring copies of the newspaper to the Defender office and then learn the trade of journalism at his side. Others were people that wanted to participate in different ways. Artists wanted to become cartoonists, who became cartoonists for the Defender. And so this really became a community enterprise, and one that was built from the grassroots up.
Chris, put this in a broader perspective for us. How many black newspapers were operating at that time, and what kind of influence did these papers have on the community?
Well, the newspapers had a very impactful experience for those in the black community, understanding that during the time period of the emergence of the Defender, it was within the nadir of the African-American history, which were considered the decades of disappointment, where you had, after coming out of slavery, there were these promises of equality, the promises of this inclusive freedom, and yet there were still oppressive laws. You still had rampant incidents of lynchings. And so newspapers like the Defender confronted those issues during that time period. They were a leader. And also, they were part of this lineage of black journalism that began with the Freedom's Journal in 1827, which was a newspaper that was the first black-owned and operated newspaper in the United States. And it served to address issues that dealt with slavery, but also colonization, which was a very important topic during that time period.
Or the lynchings, I guess Eitan referred to these as extrajudicial violence. Were these the big issue at the time when these papers were first coming out?
Absolutely. Ida B. Wells is known, much of her journalism was focused on the lynchings that were taking place. And so this was a critical issue for the black population here in America. But also, the newspaper was very well-rounded, that it also focused in on international issues as well, especially understanding the connection with Africa, and making sure that stories were being told in that regard. And so it did a very fascinating job of making sure that it encompassed and included a lot of issues that were very important to the black community.
Eitan, how risky was it to work for the Defender during this time period? I mean, what were the dangers the reporters and the staff faced?
The dangers could be were up to and including murder. Many of the Defender reporters would go into the South, where, as I mentioned, the overwhelming majority of African Americans lived at that time. And the South at that time was legally segregated, in that there were laws that were put in place to separate African Americans in public life, but violence was a regular part, as Chris mentioned, violence was a regular part of the program of oppression that was going on in the South. So the Defender was really created as a kind of counter-propaganda vehicle, where it would publish the truth about what was going on in the South and send newspapers into the region where the readers, as the Defender was an African-American newspaper, the majority of its readers were in the South. So people who distributed the newspaper, people who sold the newspaper were often at risk. And people who reported for the newspaper could be at risk. And in 1911, the South even attempted to censor the Defender in Chicago by sending Pinkerton detectives up to the city to arrest Robert Abbott and bring him back to the South. Robert Abbott was able to call on the assistance of influential friends in the community, an African-American lawyer named Ed Bright, who was an experienced civil rights warrior, and also an African-American physician who was the personal representative of Booker T. Washington, came to Robert Abbott's aid. And together, they pointed out that Chicago at that time had African-American policemen and an African-American National Guard unit, and it was really only through that threat of force that they were able to chase the Pinkertons away from Chicago. So you can imagine what the consequences would have been for African-American reporters or distributors working for the Defender in the South. It was really a dangerous occupation, and the reporters, who are many of whom are unsung even today, were risking their lives to get the news.
Hey, Tony, at one point, the Defender was labeled as the most dangerous of all Negro journals. Who was calling it that, and why did they call it that?
Well, that was, I believe, a statement from law enforcement, federal law enforcement, that was looking at evaluating the Defender during World War I as a source of, as I said, of I would describe it as counter-propaganda. But by exposing the atrocities that were going on in the South, this was seen by some in the federal government during World War I as a threat to the war effort. And there was a consideration from the federal government in World War I and in World War II whether or not to censor the black press. And it was really only the political protests and public efforts, as well as private efforts, of the black publishers themselves that fended off the efforts of the federal government to censor the black press. They really made the argument in both eras that the black press, by exposing the truth about the way that the United States was operating, was in effect bringing African Americans into the war effort by telling them that they could fight for freedom and democracy at home as well as abroad. We have to remember that the United States military at this time was segregated. African American soldiers in both wars served in segregated units, usually under white officers, and in conditions that were not equivalent to the conditions that the white soldiers fought under. So the Defender was the Defender's publishers. It was Robert Abbott in World War I and John Sengstack in World War II, his nephew and his successor, who were essential in making sure that the black press could continue to operate unfettered by the censorship of the federal government.
I think it's also critical to understand the reach of the Defender. Two-thirds of its readership's base was located outside of Chicago. So this was a national newspaper, a national publication, and they took on very pressing issues. In 1919, you had the Red Summer Riots, and the Defender provided firsthand coverage of these events. And for those who are not familiar, the Red Summer Riots were a series of race riots in cities across the country. And so they were uncovering this news to a population that probably weren't aware of what was going on, but they were giving firsthand coverage and opinions about it. And so it was a very, very critical publication during that time period.
We will continue our conversation, and you can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Eitan Mikaeli is the author of The Defender, How Chicago's Legendary Black Newspaper Changed America. He's going to be the featured speaker next week at the National Underground Railroad Freedom Center's John and Francie Pepper Freedom Lecture Series. And he joins us this afternoon along with Freedom Center Manager of Program Initiatives, Chris Miller. And you can join us at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Eitan, of course, early in the 20th century, the lynchings and the violence were a big issue. That shifted somewhat during World War II, didn't it? Because of the military being segregated, the big issue then became the segregation of the armed forces, if I understand correctly.
Well, that's right. The Defender, I should say, was really the primary instigator of the what's now called the Great Migration during World War One. The Defender had brought hundreds of thousands, in fact, really the first 50,000 African Americans who came to the city during World War One were directly inspired by the Defender, and the hundreds of thousands who came afterwards were either directly or indirectly inspired by the Defender, as well as those who came in the first wave. So when you had this changing demographic in the country, as millions of African Americans started to come north, you also had a changing political dynamic in the country, and the Defender was very much involved in organizing the African Americans who came north, as well as African Americans who were in the South, and into a political force. In the North especially, African Americans began shifting from the Republican Party to the Democratic Party, and they were also an important swing vote in the North as a result. And that combination of circumstances allowed them to push for different types of changes to the American system, such as the desegregation of the armed forces. And in 1948, with Harry Truman running for his first term as elected president of the United States, he had been, succeeded Franklin Roosevelt when Franklin Roosevelt died shortly after his reelection. So Truman was running for his first election in 1948. He was from Missouri. He was not an automatic choice of African Americans, even though he was FDR's successor. And he and John Sengstack, the publisher of the Chicago Defender, effectively negotiated a deal where the Defender and its voice would get behind Truman if Truman got behind the idea of integrating the U.S. armed forces. And the publisher of the Defender and the powerful congressman from Chicago named William Dawson, who was then just one of two African-American congressmen in the United States, in the whole country, went out and barnstormed for Harry Truman. And in fact, the results of the African-American electorate's galvanization around Harry Truman was that Truman won the election. Truman would not have won the election without the support of the African-American community and without the endorsement of the Chicago Defender, because Truman had committed to desegregating the armed forces, and he in fact created a commission to desegregate the armed forces with John Sengstack, the Defender publisher, on as a member.
What kind of challenges did black soldiers face, Chris, because of the military being segregated?
Quite a few challenges. I kind of think of my father, to be quite honest with you. He's one of those individuals who migrated from Canton, Mississippi up to Chicago. So he was a part of that great migration. He also served in the Navy as well. And he would speak first accounts of the level of segregation that was involved in the military. And so you had one of the most recognizable things was your position in the military, your advancement. Those particular roles and responsibilities, such as working in the cafeteria, the mess hall, or just working at the bottom of the ship, as far as just janitorial type of duties, were regulated to men of color. And so there wasn't that equality of advancement that they were seeing even with the U.S. military. And so that was always an issue. My father actually would discuss and talk about some of those issues that he faced being a black man in the military.
Mm-hmm. So, Eitan, how did you become involved with the Defender?
So I should say that I'm a white guy, grew up in upstate New York. And I initially came to Chicago as a student at the University of Chicago, and I was recommended for recommended to replace a friend of mine at the Chicago Defender. He offered to recommend me to replace him. I had never heard of the newspaper before he mentioned it. He was also a white Jewish guy from the suburbs. When he mentioned it to me, it was really attractive because I was looking for a writing job. I graduated with a degree in English literature at that time. This was back in 1991. And the Defender, I just assumed, was one of many newspapers around the country that was owned, that had an African-American owner. And I didn't think that there was really anything that remarkable about it. Frankly, I thought we were in a post-racial era back then. It was really only when I walked through the door of the newspaper for the interview, and this was at the time the newspaper was in a historic building at 24th Street and Michigan Avenue, and I saw the portrait of Robert Abbott in the lobby. I saw his words inscribed in the floor of the lobby, and I saw a glass case that had copies of the newspaper going back, not quite back to 1905, but at least to 1908. And I saw really there a complete history of the United States, of America, that I had not known before. And that was really the moment that I began to understand that I was somewhere very special, and that I would certainly get an education unlike any other, unlike the education I'd received at the University of Chicago until that point. And it was true. The 5.5 years that I spent at the Defender taught me a great deal about how race really operates in this country, how politics really work in this country, and the critical role that Chicago and other cities in the Midwest have played in American history, a role that I really think is understood very often.
Now, what's become of the Defender? Does it still exist?
It is. The Defender is still around. It's a weekly now. It was a daily back when I worked there in the 1990s. It's still got a ferocious staff that does a great job with very limited resources, very much like we did back in our day. And it still punches greatly above its weight class because it is an essential voice of an essential community in the country. The editor is called upon whenever there is an important news event locally or nationally. Even during the 2016 Democratic competition in Democratic primaries in Illinois, the Defender's editor was on the radio and on TV often, speaking on behalf of the community.
Chris, what's the relevance? Why is it important to know the story of the Defender?
It's important to know the story because the understanding of that lineage that I refer to, you know, at the start of the Civil War, there were 40 black-owned and operated papers that had been established throughout the United States. And the Defender was one of those publications that came in that nadir of African-American history, those decades of disappointment, which are very critical. And far too often, we don't have discussions about that time period. We like to jump from Civil War to civil rights. And that time period between the Civil War and civil rights is so, so important because you have the development of organizations like the NAACP. You have the emergence of publications like the Defender. You have Black Greek organizations that are being founded. And so you have this growth and development that's going on. And it's very important that we harken back on that history and the lessons because we are going through a phase in our country where there is a certain there's racial discourse. We still have the topic of race relations, and we're still dealing with those issues. So publications like The Defender were very important in shedding some truth and light to that situation. And that light and truth is needed today. Etan writing this book about this publication is something that we can use and apply today for us to really take a look at journalism. How is it look today, and how it can be used to improve our community?
Etan, did your experience with the Defender, is that what influenced you to start the Residence Journal?
Oh, absolutely. The Defender taught me that newspapers, that media is a powerful and important way for communities who are underserved to fight back. And there was no community that was being less well served in Chicago at that time than public housing tenants in the city. And today also, there are a lot of, it's not just, of course, the Residents Journal that was inspired by the Defender, but many, many publications in many different communities got their start either directly from the Defender or from staff members that spent time at the newspaper. I know, for example, the publisher of the Windy City Times, the GLBTQ newspaper in Chicago, her mother worked at the Defender, was one of the white editors, who was a part of a long legacy of white employees at the Defender. And she got her inspiration. Tracy Baim at the Windy City Times got her inspiration from her mother, who always talked about the power of the black press to be able to give other communities a voice, to give communities that don't have a voice.
Now, Chris, tell us about the event that's coming up on September the 12th that Eitan's going to be speaking at.
Absolutely. We will have a wonderful lecture by Eitan on September 12th. The reception begins at 6 p.m., followed by a lecture at 7 p.m. If you would like to register to RSVP, it is free and open to the public. You can visit freedomcenter.org. You will actually, when you visit our website or webpage, you will actually see the quilt page where you can click on the event, and that will lead you to the reservation page. And so reservations are open. We want to invite the community to come out to have a very meaningful conversation about journalism, about the history of it, especially related to the Defender. And we're quite sure that the community coming out, they will find something that resonates today with the lecture and how it can be impactful for today.
Eitan and Chris, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Eitan Mikaeli, author of The Defender, How Chicago's Legendary Black Newspaper Changed America, and from the National Underground Railroad Freedom Center, Manager of Program Initiatives, Chris Miller. Coming up, Learning Through Art marks its 25th year. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.